Hi, and welcome to Hill Country Bible Church. How are you doing today? Good, good. Hey, I have some good news for you. Many of you reach down to pick up your Bible, you look up and it's like, that's not Tim. Where's my pastor going to? The great news is he's coming back. That's good, okay? Hey, I just wanted to start out and let you know that it's an honor and a privilege to be able to speak to Hill Country today and to be a part of a ministry, a church that has such a vision to reach the world. And so as we kind of come today, you know, we have been continuing in a series of Life to the Full. And I don't know if you've noticed this or not. I've lived a little while, and I've noticed that a lot of people have a lot of opinions of how to live life to the full, how to live a blessed life, how to live a life that we feel like is planned for us. You know what I'm talking about? So I'm going to get really theological on you because our family, we really, really love board games. Anybody else love board games? You love to play? Good. You'll probably recognize we have a game that we usually like to play, and it's called the Game of Life. Yeah, that's a good game. And so you can just spin, and I mean, you can dream about making millions of dollars and being able to have a convertible car with a bunch of kids. No, I mean, without the kids in the back seat. I mean, this is a great game, right? Well, as I was preparing for the message, I was kind of reading through some instructions about the game. And it's kind of interesting what the instructions say. So I just want to take time. I know you spent your Sunday morning. I'm going to take time to read the instructions to you to how to play life, okay? This is just an opinion, one of those opinions of how we can play this game of life. Now it says, when you have reached the end of the game, you must choose whether to retire at millionaire estates or countryside acres. That's a no-brainer right there. Which one do you want to go to? Countryside estates sounds a little twisted to me. I'm going to the millionaire estates. And it says, if I retire at the millionaire estates, you and I have a chance to receive 4 additional life tiles if you are the richest person to retire there. Now, at the end of the game, all players repay their loans. Sounds kind of familiar, huh? And add up their life tiles and money. And get this. The player with the most money wins the game. That's an opinion, right? Some of us actually believe that. We pursued that in our lives. There's a whole world that pursues that. If I really want a life to the full, it's how many toys I can get to gain and how much money I can achieve, I can get. My salary has to continue to increase. My house has to get bigger. I have to get a bigger car. And what happens is we get into a trap. Now, there's more to the directions. And you're like, good, because that doesn't sound like my life. It says this, it continues on, sometimes life doesn't work out the way you want it to. Many of you probably don't relate to this game of life, but you say, my life is more like this game. Trouble is my life. I understand that. I love that game because it's trouble and you just get to beat the board the whole time. If you haven't played it yet, it's a good way to get your frustrations out. But it says this, even if you do not get the salary you want or end up with a car full of kids, you must continue to play by the rules. It continues on, but let me just tell you this. Some of you are like, rules, kids? What rules? What kids? Let me just tell you this. A lot of people have an opinion. Our culture has an opinion on how we should live life to the full. And that's just one way. But there is another opinion. And this opinion matters more than anything because it's actually true. Jesus says this in John 10:10. He says, I have come that you may have life and have life to the full. How many people want that? 2. All right. You guys, it's 10 o'clock. If you were the 8:30 crowd, I would have understood. But here we go. How many want a life to the full? You want a life, right? Yeah. So here's the question. How? How do you get that life? Well, we're actually going to look at a family that was dysfunctional. And I know for me, living my life, I can kind of relate to the people we're going to talk about today, at least 2 of them. And those 2 people were living life, and they got lost. And they're in their lostness, they have choices to make. And then the end of the choice will determine whether they will live the life that God has intended for them. And I love a verse, and I just want to point this out, because when I get lost in life, this verse has been a comfort to me. It's simply this, Luke 19:10. Jesus was speaking, and he says this. He says, I have come to seek and to save those which are lost. I've been there before. I have seasons of that in my life. And I don't know if you relate to that or not, but we're about to look at two guys that actually found themselves lost. One knew he was lost, and the other didn't. And so as we look at that, I want to look at that word save, that Jesus has come to save. That word is a Greek word called sozo. And that word sozo means to rescue. And he reaches down and he rescues those that are lost. And so let's turn to Luke chapter 15, verse number 1. We're going to be in the book of Luke chapter 15, verse number 1. And I have to give you the setting just for as we open it up. When we look at this chapter, we have to understand Jesus is speaking to people. There are crowds of people. And he's talking to them about how to have eternal life. A lot of people have come because they have heard that he has actually raised the dead. This guy has actually made the lame walk again, the blind to see. I mean, there's something about this guy, and people wanted to be around him. I think that would have been me. I think I would have wanted to follow this guy around just to see, if nothing else, even if I didn't believe in him, I'd want to see what is taking place with this guy. So he has crowds of people. Some of them may be believers, some of them may not. But there's a crowd of people, a group of people that are in the midst of all of them that were the religious crowd. They were church people. They actually, a little bit better than church people. They would strive to be the best. What we would say, perfect. You ever seen some of those people before? Man, they just want to be perfect about everything. Now, it's called the Pharisees, and he's going to address something that they say about him, but let's take a look at chapter 15, verse number 1. It says, now the tax collectors and sinners. Now, I'm going to kind of read the verses. I'll stop, kind of talk a little bit, kind of unpack it a little bit, and I want to stop right there. Did you notice he lists two groups? Now, there are sinners and tax collectors. To me, it's interesting that Jesus would separate those people. Sinners, we know those are bad people, right? Because we are those. Bible says all have what? Sinned. And we've fallen short of God. Let's just help me out just for a second. Can you say this? I am broken. Now, I saw some of you were saying, you are broken. Now, I didn't say that. Take responsibility this morning. Help me out. And let's just kind of be excited. And Steiner Ranch is joining us with this. So here we go. I am broken. That's a true statement, isn't it? But these people didn't believe that. But I did notice that they separated sinners and tax collectors. Tax collectors were very hated people by the Jews because they actually worked for the Roman government. And if you were Jewish people, they would come to you and they would get taxes from you. And most of the time, they would add even more taxes. So they were cheating you. They were ripping you off and taking some of that money and giving it to the Roman government, which was the government that was oppressing you. You hated those people. So anytime you see sinners, you'll see tax collectors. Some things don't change, do they? Here we go. If you work for the IRS, please forgive me for that, okay? This was a couple of thousand years ago that he was saying this, not today. So then he says, but the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, what did they do? They muttered, which simply means they complained. I've never heard church people complain before, have you? But the Pharisees, we have some non-church people here today, say amen. And the teachers of the law, they muttered, this man, they said, welcomes sinners and actually eats with them. Now, that was very important that they said eats with them. He not only sits with them, talks to them, actually engages and embraces them, he actually sits and eats with them. Now, why is that a big deal to the Pharisees? Well, the Pharisees actually thought this, that if they lived perfect lives at least two Sabbaths in a row, the Messiah would come. So they would strive for that. So to help them accomplish that, they took the 613 laws out of the Bible, out of the Old Testament, and they tried to live those. Now, that wasn't enough. They actually added 1,500 more laws and rules and regulations that they needed to live in their life. And they said that if they could live by those laws, then the Messiah, at least two Sabbaths in a row, then the Messiah would come back. Some of you that are still teenagers or younger would simply say this, man, I thought my parents had some rules. These guys had lots of rules, and they tried to live by those rules. So they looked at people two ways. They looked at, there was a group of people called the clean, and everybody else were unclean. And they felt like they were the clean people. So they had a problem with this because some of those laws were actually the Levitical laws. Because they had to live with them, they said, we have to actually separate ourselves when we have dinner or when we have times where we come to what they call the table of fellowship. Nothing unclean can be there. They got the Levitical laws from the high priest in the temple, and they implemented them into their daily lives. So for them to see Jesus, which called himself a rabbi, which also called himself the Son of God, to see him actually break all of those laws and eat with a sinner, that was actually heresy to them. They didn't like this guy, and they had a problem with it. But I love Jesus. He doesn't deny it. Remember, why did he come? To seek and to sozo, to rescue who? The lost. Which are who? The clean or the unclean? Unclean. Or is it the clean too? Think about that just a second, because I think he's going to answer that question in just a moment. But he says, this man welcomes sinners and eats with them. So Jesus, he's going to tell a couple of stories to kind of set the table for them. He talks about there is a lost sheep. He said, there is a person, a shepherd, that has 100 sheep. If one were to get lost, what would he do? He would leave the 99 and go after the one sheep. Once he finds the one sheep, the lost sheep, he would bring that sheep home. And what would he do when he got home? He would celebrate. He would throw a party. Why? Because that which was lost is now found. That's a good story, isn't it? Now he's setting the table for them. Don't forget, who is he talking to? Pharisees, clean people. Is mad, they're mad about Jesus talking to unclean and eating with unclean people. He goes to the next story. He says this, the parable of the lost coin. He tells a story about a woman that has a necklace with 10 coins on it. She loses one of the 10 coins and she can't find it. It is lost. So what does she do? She turns the house upside down to find that lost coin. When she finds it, she does what? She celebrates. She throws a party. Why is that? Because what was lost is now found. He just shares these stories with them. I think you're getting a theme here, right? We get a theme that, man, something is lost, but now it's found. And then he goes to this story. Now, I have to tell you this. This is one of the most famous stories besides the Christmas story and actually the Easter story. This is one of the most famous stories in the Bible. Did you know that scholars even say that this is probably the perfect story? This one is one of the best stories that's ever told. So even if you're an unchurched person, or you're here today and you haven't been in church in a long time, you probably have heard this story before. So as we jump into it, I have to encourage you, if you have heard this story, kind of open your mind a little bit and go, don't do what the Pharisees did, because they actually, when you look at verse number one, let me start there. It says, Jesus continued. He goes into the story. It says, there was a man who had two sons. Now a Pharisee or a Jewish person that is sitting there may actually pick up on the first phrase of this, first couple of sentences of this story. And they may actually go, oh, I've heard this story before. Because I don't know if you knew this or not, scholars believe there was another story. There was an original story. And in the original story, it starts out just the same way. It is the prodigal story. But what happens is when it gets down to the end, he gets what he deserves. The father abandons him, kicks him out, has nothing to do with him. So Jesus is going to use, and he always does, something that they would recognize, a story that would be familiar to them. But then Jesus always surprises them because he's going to do a little twist to it. So hang on, let's read this story, and it says this. So there the Pharisees are listening. Oh, there was a man with who had two sons. We've heard that story. What is he going to talk about? The younger one said to his father, Father, give me my share of the estate. Now, for a Jewish crowd sitting there, that would have been just terrible. That would have been awful. For a Jewish son to actually go to his father, who was not deathly ill, who had no plans of dying soon, and to walk up to him and say, hey, Dad, would you give me my estate? Would you give my inheritance, my portion of it? I don't care if you're about to die or not. You've lived too long. I don't know what all he said, but it means it has a connotation. There's nothing in the Jewish law for this to even happen. If he did this, it would have been disrespectful. It would have been dishonoring to his father, and he actually could have been beaten for saying this. So all the Pharisees are like, yeah, that's what should happen to him because he gets what he deserves, right? That's what the Pharisees thought. And he's setting it up that this is a very unclean person. So he goes on and he says this. He says, there was a man, the younger one said to his father, Father, give me my share of the estate. So how does he respond? He goes, okay. So he divided his property between them. Notice that both of them received, there's two sons, both of them received their inheritance. Both of them received their estate. Then it says, not long after that, the younger son got together all that he had. That tells us something else. Now back then, your estate or your inheritance would be property. Property was very valuable back then to them. It was very important to them. They had, it's generational, what they had in their property. And so it's handed down from generation to generation. He had that. He probably also had some livestock. But he's not going to take all that with him. He wants to go out and he wants to do what he wants to do. He wants to live life. He wants to party. He wants to rebel against everything that he has. So what he did is he probably sold that land. We don't know that for sure. But we know that he took what he had. That meant that he probably liquidated everything that he had. He had his pockets full of money, which would also have gone public to the people because it was not very common that a person would sell their property. It was not looked on highly. So he not only shamed his dad, but he also shamed the village that he lived in. So what is he setting up for the Pharisees? This is a bad guy. If anybody is unclean, this guy is an unclean guy. But he continues on. It gets worse. It says, not long after that, the younger son got together all that he had, and he set off for a distant country. Now, I just want to share this. In the Greek, distant country actually means Las Vegas. All right? Didn't know if you knew that or not. So here he is. He's headed to Las Vegas, or to what we know as Sin City. That is a joke. Don't go out of here thinking that. That's where he went. But he went off to a distant country, and there he squandered. That word squandered is a very important word. Because squandered, some of you have been out to West Texas before. West Texas, there's two things I know about West Texas. I haven't been out there very much, but every time I've been out there, there's dirt out in West Texas. Lots of dirt. And there's lots of wind. So squandered, actually, you can picture this. Reaching down to the ground in West Texas, picking up a handful of dirt and taking it and throwing it up into the air, and what happens? The wind goes, poof, it's gone. That's what happened to him. He took everything he had. He took it, he went to that distant city. And he squandered it. He blew his inheritance. Everything that he had. You said, does that really happen? It happens even today. I had somebody, whenever I lived in Las Vegas, I had somebody walk into my office, a grandmother. She was about 80 years of age. And she had her life savings, almost $100,000. In one day, she sat down at one machine in one casino in Las Vegas, and she gambled it all away. What did she do? She reached down, she took it, squandered it. That's what this guy did. That happens all the time today. This guy did that. What would these people say about he's an unclean person? He's a bad dude. He's somebody that, man, he deserves what what's coming to him. So he keeps on going, and it says that he squandered his wealth in wild living. Now, that wild living actually can be, the word is reckless. Now I want to kind of share with you, I looked at the DMV just to find out what that word reckless meant. You know, they actually talk about reckless driving, and they have a definition for it. And some of you may have had some experience with this. I don't know. But it says this, a person who drives with wanting, and that word wanting is malicious, exceptional, and willful disregard for the safety of persons or property. Do you get that? What that's saying, that definition is, I don't care what the rules say. Sure, I got my driver's license. I don't care what the speed limit says. I don't care what the rules are for driving. I am going to do what? I'm going to do what I want to do, and that is reckless. You can get a ticket for that. You can actually be locked up for that. You can lose your driver's license for that. That's the kind of living this guy did. I don't care what my dad says. I don't care what he thinks. I don't care what I've been taught. I'm going to do what I want to do. Now, don't be so judgmental on him, because you know what? I find myself in that same situation growing up, and also even today with my Heavenly Father. God, I know what your word says. I'm going to do what I want to do. I want to live like I want to live. I don't care if it hurts somebody. I don't even care if it hurts myself or damages anything. Anybody else like that? Sure, we get in seasons like that. And this son, he squandered everything in wild living. He was living recklessly. It says, after that, he had spent everything, and there was a severe famine in the whole country, and he began to be in need. What is he doing? He is about to hit rock bottom. In verse number 15, so he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country. And let me talk to you about what does that mean, hired himself out. That actually is better translated as he glued himself to that citizen. Now, in our day and time, this is what it looks like. This used to happen to us all the time living on the West Coast. We'd go up to the gas station, put my card in, and I would get the hose, the gas pump hose, and I would put it into the car. As soon as I turn around, there's a guy up in the front of my car cleaning my windshield. And I'm like, hey, come on, get away from my car. What does he want? He wants me to give him something, right? That's probably happened to you here in Texas too. But here I am, I'm like, hey, quit it. I don't need you to do that. And what does he do? He comes around to the side and he starts cleaning it. And he keeps on and keeps on and keeps on until I do what? Give him something. He's glued to me. He has a need and he wants it met and he wants me to meet that need. Now that's what he was doing. He found a citizen and he glued himself to him. He pestered this guy. Now a Jew was not going to offend another Jew, so this is probably what he would do. They would usually, or commonly, they would do this. They wouldn't offend them by firing him or actually not hiring him. They would offer a job to him, something that that person would not accept. Jewish boy was told this. He said, okay, I got a job for you. And it says this, he sent him to his fields to do what? Feed pigs. For a Jewish boy to be around anything like that would be bad. Because a Jewish boy was told not even to touch pork, much less be with pork. And live with pork and try to eat the stuff that the pork ate. But he did it. Why is that? It shows us his desperation. When we are in a place where we are about hit bottom, we do things we normally would not do. And this guy did it. He took a job of feeding pigs. Now the Pharisees, remember it's just a story. The Pharisees are going, man, that's a rotten scoundrel. He's unclean. Nobody would have anything to do with him, right? But it continues on. It says he longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. That's about like life. When you have everything, life is going on. You have some people around you. But then sometimes everybody walks out on you when everything goes wrong. You feel that way sometimes. You feel alone. You feel desperate. And that's where he is. He feels alone. No one gave him anything to eat. No one gave him any money. No one was around to help him. But they were around when he wanted to spend the money. And he had a little bit of money. But it says in verse number 17, in the desperate situation, when he came to his senses. Have you ever woke up one day and went, how did I get here? I would have never done this. How in the world did I get to the place that I am right now? That's what he was doing. He hit bottom. He's sitting there. He's with the pigs. He's probably even eating some of the slop that the pigs were eating on. He's sitting in pig poo. This is a bad place. And you know what happens? He comes to his senses. Sometimes it takes us hitting bottom to actually come to our senses. And I want you to notice the first thing that he thinks of. He goes, he says, when I came to my senses, how many of my father's hired men have food to spare, and here I am starving to death. What was his first thought? His dad. My dad has better, his servants, his hired servants live better than I do. They have food to eat, and I have nothing. He starts thinking back. He starts getting a little homesick. His mind starts to wonder about the good times, memories of hanging out at dad's house, sitting around the table with him. He's reliving those moments of how life used to be, but now he's broken. He's unclean. He's a cast out of society, if that's him. And so it continues on. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, what is he doing? He's doing a plan. I got to make a plan. I cannot live here. Something's got to change. If I don't, I'm going to die. So what does he do? He says he starts practicing a speech. He's making up a speech that he's going to say to his dad when he goes home. Father, I have sinned against heaven, which is God, and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men. He's starting to practice that. I can imagine him going home, walking all the way back home to his city. As he gets closer to it, I can imagine him practicing, memorizing that statement over and over. How is my dad going to respond? What's going to happen whenever I tell him that I need a job? He wasn't talking about forgiveness or being restored as a son. He said, I'm not even worthy to do that. So that doesn't even cross his mind. I just want a job. I just need some help, Dad. Your hired servants are better than I'm living right now. Can you help me out? And so he's practicing that, and so he got up. That's a very key statement there. When we're down to the bottom of where we are in life, it's good to get up, isn't it? That's the first step. The first step to getting out of the situation that we are in is to get up. To get up, and what else does he do? He says he went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him. I want to stop right there. Remember, I told you there's another version to the story. This is where the story is about to change, though. Because the Pharisees have been along with the story the whole time. They understood, hey, this guy's getting what is coming to him. He's getting what he deserves. He's an unclean person. So they're going along with the story, and they know the ending. Or they think they do. But here's where Jesus twists the story a little bit. This is where their jaws are going to drop, their eyes are going to open wide, and they're going to hear something that they were not expecting to hear. Watch what he says. The father's response, he saw him, which means he was probably looking for him, and was filled with what? Compassion. Now that word is not used very many times in the Bible. That is love. That is a compassion that's stronger than just the love that has the butterflies in your stomach. You've been there before. Remember that first love? Or even you're married. You've been married 25 years and you still look at your wife or your husband. You still have butterflies in your stomach, I'm sure, right? Just say yes. Nod your head yes. You do not want to get in trouble with that one. But it's more than that. It's like this. It's a gut type love. And that gut type love is like this. I love you, but I feel like I'm about to puke. It is intense. And what happens here is it's a love that has caused something to action. I got to do something because of this love. It's the same love that's mentioned in John chapter 3. Right before we get to that famous verse of John 3:16 that says that he sent his son to die for us. And right before that uses this word compassion. It's a gut love. And what happens is it's a love that calls to action. Jesus, he loves broken people. It talks about that in John 3. Remember Luke 19:10. What has he done? I have come to seek and to save, to rescue and to save those which are lost. So in John 3, it says that there are lost people. There are broken people in the world. And what happens? Something needs to be done. And the something that needed to be done was Jesus needed to come to this earth. His father sent him here as a missionary to all of us to do what? To die for us and to give us forgiveness and grace and radical grace that we don't even deserve. It's that kind of love. So he's explaining here, this is bad. Pharisees are going, no, that's unclean. That boy deserves worse than that. He deserves no love at all. But Jesus continues with the story. Not only was he filled with compassion for him, the action is, he ran to his son. And let me tell you something about that. Pharisees are really going to get upset about this. Because ladies will run in the Jewish custom. Children may run in the Jewish custom. Slaves can run in the Jewish custom. But a patriarch, an older father, does not run. That's humiliating for him to do that. What's even more humiliating is when they did run, they would usually reach down and grab their robe and wrap it around their knees or a little bit higher up around their thigh, and they would run. In Isaiah 47, the Israelites, the country of Israel, it was called sin for them to do that. And here is a Jewish patriarch, sees his son, compassion, and he takes his robe, wraps it way up here, and what does he do? He runs. He's humiliating himself. For what? An unclean person. You following the story now? Keep on going. See what he says. He not only does that, but he throws his arm around him. You know that he didn't have time to clean up. We don't see that he cleaned up. He had no money. He had no place to go. So this guy with pig stuff all over him, his dad embraces him. And not only does he do that, he kisses him. Now that word kissed, the word that is used is smothered him with kisses. Can you imagine that? For a patriarch to do that to a son that is unclean, that's bad news to a Pharisee. But he continues on. He says, the son said to him, remember the speech that he was practicing? I'm sure he feels a little weird anyway. Number one is, what's my dad running for? And number two is, why is he kissing me? Teenagers understand that. What happens is, he starts to say his speech. Father, I have sinned against heaven, and I have sinned against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Now, you do know there's more to the statement, right? But for some reason, he can't finish the statement. I think it's because the next word, but the father is going to step in. It says this, but the father said to his servants, do what? Cast him out. Get him out of here. That's what the Pharisees would say. He's unclean. He gets what he deserves. He's an outcast. But he doesn't say that. He says, quick, get a robe. The robe. I can picture, you know, when we come to Christ and all of our mess and all of our junk, we're broken people. When we come to Christ, what does he do? He puts a robe of righteousness around us. It's not our robe. It's his robe. He puts it around us, which is a picture of him taking away all of the stuff that he's done. That's good news for us, isn't it? That's good news for this son, but it's not to the Pharisees. But he continues on. He not only gives him a robe, it's his best robe. He put it on him. He put a ring on his finger, which is authority, and then sandals on his feet. Slaves don't wear sandals. Remember, that's what he said. I'm not worthy to be your son. Family members, sons wear sandals. You see how Jesus is intentionally using every single word to prove a point. He's painting a picture to these guys. This father had a son that was lost. Lost son comes back. What does he do? Embraces him. Gives him grace when he doesn't even deserve it. Radical grace because nobody expects it. And he continues on. He makes him, restores him, reconciles him to be a son. That's good news for the lost son, but not to the Pharisees. He continues on, but the father said in verse number 23, bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and do what? Celebrate. Here comes what we already heard in the previous two stories. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and now is found. So they began to celebrate. And most people would stop right there and say, man, and they lived happily ever after. That's a good story. But that's not the end of the story. Remember the accusation that was made by the Pharisees is, why is this guy, Jesus, who's supposed to be a clean person, he professes that he's a clean person, why does this guy actually eat with sinners and tax collectors? He hangs out with them, unclean people. Jesus is about to answer that question. And he says this, before he did it, he had to explain what grace was. And then, meanwhile, there was the older son, was in the field, and when he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. Your brother has come home. That should have been good news to him, right? He replied, and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound. The brother's response should have automatically been to celebrate. But Jesus wanted to share a little bit about who the Pharisees were. He wanted to describe what type of people they were. He says this, the older brother became angry. He was upset by this and refused to go in. He's pouting. He's having a pity party. And he continues on. So his father went out and pleaded with him. There's a couple of things I want to say here. There are two sons in the story. This son, he wasted his life. He blew it. But you notice when he got up, who came to him? His father ran to him. But there's another son. This son over here needs as much grace as this son does. He probably doesn't know it because he doesn't think he's lost. But what Jesus did, he says the father, what did he do? Left where he was and went to the son. Man, that's a good father, isn't it? He's not only going to him, but he's going to show him grace. But notice how the son responds to him. Well, let me go back to plead it with him, entreat it with him. That word is very important. Plead it, entreat it. It actually is the same word that Jesus used when he was talking to his disciples. He was about to go back into heaven after he rose from the dead, and he said this, I'm not going to leave you alone. I'm actually going to send you a paraclete. I'm going to send you somebody to walk alongside of you. So what is he telling the son? Son, you got to understand. I know it's tough. I understand. You're a little upset about your son that went out and just blew everything. He's identifying with him. He's saying, I'm not going to let you just have to deal with it on your own. I'm going to actually come alongside of you. We'll walk this together. But son, you need grace. You need to receive radical grace. Your attitude is wrong and something needs to change. And he continues on. Look at what the son says. But he answered his father, look. That's being disrespectful right there in the Jewish custom. Because what he should have said was addressed his father, father, and then made the statement. But he did not. I picture him doing this, taking his finger, looking at his dad, and poking it in his chest and saying, hey, you look here, dad. You don't tell me what to do. You don't tell me how to act. That guy blew his life, and look what you're doing. He even actually says that. He says, look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. I've done works for you, yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. Does sound like a pity party, doesn't it? But when this son of yours, notice how it becomes your son. It's almost like when you parent and your child acts bad and your wife looks at your husband and says, hey, you need to take care of your son. Your son is acting out. I'm like, hey, what happened to our son? When he's bad, he's my son. It's the same thing here. He's looking at his dad and saying, hey, your son who has squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, you killed the fatted calf for him. And he's just saying all these things, and he's saying in a disrespectful way. Now, the Pharisees are kind of stepping back a little bit because now they get the story. He's talking to us. And they need grace. They need to change the way that they're doing. But notice how the father even responds to that. If he would have been my son, I would have put him back in his place. But what does God do? What does the father do? He says in verse number 31, my son, the father said, you are always with me and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate. We had to be glad because this brother of yours, notice what the father is doing. He is turning it back around saying, he is your brother. And you need to celebrate. You need to welcome him. Because why? He was dead and is now alive again. He was lost and now is found. You know what? He's got the Pharisees' attention now. He's actually telling them, some of us, religious people, are actually standing in the way of people like him that are lost, that want to get to the grace of God, and we stand in the way with our self-righteousness and condemnation, and we come down on them hard and say, they don't deserve God's forgiveness. They don't deserve God's grace. They don't deserve what he has for them. I do because of everything that I've done. We forget sometimes that we are broken. All of us. All of us are in need of grace. I identify with both of these guys. I have this season in my life where I'm far from God. Or I have this season where I think I got my act together and I become a lot more judgmental. And I'm like, why is that person in church anyway? They shouldn't be here. This is for Christians. And God's saying, get out of the way. This is my house. I will welcome all people in this house. And when they come back to you, no matter where they've been, no matter where they come, we celebrate. That's what he's telling those Pharisees. That's why I sit with sinners and tax collectors. Can I just say this before we close? He had their attention. I don't know about you, but when our kids were young, my wife and I, our kids, your kids probably didn't act like this, but our kids were like all over the place. I mean, we couldn't get their attention for anything. It's like, how do you get a kid's attention? So we'd read all these books and say, okay, that tells me nothing about my kid. This is not my kid at all. So we figured out, like most of us do, we act like we know what we're doing, fake out the kids, at least try, and we came up with something to get their attention, and we called it noses. And what would happen is when we really had something we wanted to say, we would say noses. And what they would do is come right up to us and put their nose to ours, and they would look at us. And what would happen is we'd have their full attention. And it's funny because even in that picture, we're celebrating July the 4th. He's got a little flag painted on his face. Somebody kind of captured that picture without us knowing about it. We're in this conversation. His eyes are actually crossing. He's trying to find, okay, where's my dad? Where is he? Okay, there. Oh, okay, there he is. Once we had that, it's almost a funny thing, but I had to be serious because I had something important to say. And we are face to face right there, and I am telling him what he needs to hear. Did you know what I found out? God does that too, doesn't he? You know that guy that was in the pigsty? God called noses to him and had his full attention. And sometimes it takes us going way down into the pit for God to call noses to us. But when he does, he has our full attention. And we're like, God, whatever I can do, I need to do it. And he says, you know what? I have grace for you. In Romans 8, it says, there is now no condemnation. That's great news. He can come back to God. And most of us think that if we live a life like that, God is mad at us and we can't come to him. We got to clean up our life. Now, this isn't saying, hey, go out and live like you want to. Remember, the whole deal is we're trying to live a life that's full, that's better for us. But he says that when we do get lost, you can come home. Hebrews says this in chapter 4, that when we can go boldly to his throne. And what do we find? We find grace and mercy in our time of need. Sometimes we don't live like that. Or maybe we're on this side. Maybe there's somebody that as we talk, you started thinking about somebody that you've been judgmental to. Maybe it's a certain group of people. And we start thinking that since we are under his grace and walk under his grace and we've done good things, that we deserve it. We don't deserve anything. It's his house. It's his grace. He's extended it to us. Let me ask you this question. How many need grace today? How many deserve grace today? None of us. He kind of levels the ground, doesn't he? I want to close this a little bit differently. I want everybody just to take just a moment, bow your head and close your eyes. We're not going to do anything freaky, so just bow your head and close your eyes. So we wrap this up. I want to just share this with you. There are two different groups of people in here. There's maybe even a third group. But I just want to talk to the two that we talked about today. Maybe you're here and today you're like, man, that is me. I am that older son. I am the one that's been standing in the way of someone receiving grace. Maybe you haven't extended to them the grace. Maybe they've hurt you. Maybe it's been a wayward child. And you're like, I cast them out. Maybe they need some grace. You say, that's tough. It's hard. He said he'll come alongside of you. He will help you. Or maybe it's somebody that you think, man, they've gone too far. You quit praying for them. Maybe you need to start praying for them again. Because God's grace, no matter where they've been or what they've done, God's grace can actually reach them. And you're here today. Whatever he spoke to you about, maybe you are the elder son. Can I just pray this? Can I ask you to do this? While you're sitting there with your head bowed and eyes closed, would you just take time to reflect on that? Thank God for his radical grace that he's given to you and live in that. But then in turn, there may be something you need to do. Have compassion on people. And would you take time just to talk to God about that right now? If you're recognizing that you are probably that elder son. Maybe you're here and you are far from God. Man, somebody invited you to come today. You don't have anything to do with church. But all of a sudden you stumbled into this place today. I believe God can turn the universe to make things happen. And I believe God can turn the universe sometimes to make sure that you're at a place where God can tell you, I love you no matter what you've done. My grace is extended to you. And yes, it is grace and it is so radical. I want to give you a life that is full, what you are intended for. And you are struggling, but you know right now that there is a God that is tapping on your shoulder and he says, come home. It's your time to come home. I want to talk to those that have never received his grace. And if you're here, you're like that, and you need to receive his grace. You need to start a life that is fresh and anew, a relationship with him to receive his forgiveness for all that you've ever done in your life. You can simply do this. Just right where you're sitting, I want you to repeat after me a prayer, but it's your prayer. And you pray it as though you're praying it to your heavenly Father. It's simple, simply this. You just say, dear Father, just quietly to yourself, as unto God, I've done wrong. I've sinned. But God, I'm very grateful for your grace. I'm very grateful that I can hear that you will receive me today. I don't have to clean up my act. That guy didn't clean his act up first. I come to you as I am, and you will take care of the rest. You will help me walk the rest of the journey. But you pray, God, please forgive me for my sins. I believe that you died for me. I believe you rose again, just like you said you would. And I need you in my life today. And God, I want to make you the leader, the Lord, the Savior of my life. And I want to live for you. If you did that for the very first time with people that have your heads bowed and eyes closed, if you